Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, I have bad news. There is an asteroid heading towards Earth. It's bigger than Texas. And the only person that can save us is Michael Bay.
And Bruce Willis?
Yeah, him too, because he knows how to drill into rocks, but they can't teach that to astronauts.
Absolutely not. Well, obviously, we're going to be talking about Armageddon.
It is, and that's today.
And can we talk about?
Well, Mr. Stamper, what do you think?
You know, drilling's a science. It's an art. I'm a third generation driller, doing it all my life, and I still haven't got it all figured out. I assume you sent for me because somebody told you I was the best. Well, I'm only the best because I work with the best. If you don't trust the men you're working with, you're as good as dead. If you want to send these boys into space, fine. I'm sure they'll make good astronauts. They don't know jack about drilling.
All they got to do is drill.
That's it.
No spacewalking, no crazy astronaut stuff.
Just drill.
How many men were you planning on taking up there?
We're sending up two shuttles, two teams.
If I do this, I'm going to want to take my own men.
You got it. So you're saying you'll help us?
Yes, sir.
Can we talk about Armageddon?
Oh, yeah.
Cinematic 1999 masterpiece by Michael Bay.
1998. You got to get it right.
What?
You got to get it.
In my research, it said 99.
Wow. Oh, no. You used ChatGPT or something. It was way off.
It was the
summer of 1998 was Armageddon.
And it was like hilarious. It was like the year of asteroid movies because a couple months before, didn't Deep Impact come out?
Yeah, I always forget which one came first. Was it Deep Impact?
I think, was first, because I remember seeing a comment and it was like, Armageddon is the best masterpiece movie since Deep Impact, which was 4 months before.
Not even closer. So Deep Impact hit theaters May 8th, 1998. 2 months later, June 30th is when Armageddon came out. So
they weren't messing around. The year of asteroids.
This is like the movie that's used as the example of like, oh, two similar movies to come out at the same time. The other one is typically like The Prestige. And what's the other one? Oh, now I forgot it too.
I don't know.
You don't know that one?
No.
It's the one with Edward Norton. But The Prestige is the Christopher Nolan one. And who did I say? Edward Norton?
You sure did.
Yeah. What movie was that? Oh, I'll find it. He's in so many. Oh, The Illusionist? Yeah, The Illusionist. Which came out, let's figure this out. So The Illusionist came out August 18th of 2006 and The Prestige came out October 20th, 2006. So
okay.
that was a little bit closer, right?
A little bit closer. So yeah. We're doing this one this week. Not only is it a cinematic masterpiece, but our sister podcast In Sync.
Yep.
Also did The Needle Drop. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. Yeah. So listen to that episode. And this is probably not going to be as well researched. It's probably going to be a lot more Amanda and Tommy making fun of it. But yeah. I will say, and I'm not embarrassed to admit, this movie still holds up for me.
Okay.
We rewatched the last night.
Yeah, same here.
There's a definite like, oh boy.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about all the plot holes. Yeah. But there is I'm very emotional when I watch this movie. And I think there's different storylines that made me emotional. Like Chicken as Kid. I remember that making me emotional. But like rewatching it last night, I was a wreck. when were we texting each other? At like 11 or 12?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I was a wreck. But I crying my eyes out.
Really?
I always do in this movie. Yeah. Maybe there's like a daughter father relationship issue there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still working through that in therapy, but I don't know. Again, very different. Yeah. I think, well, okay, 1998, I was in fifth grade.
Okay.
So yeah, this was like, you know, a big deal romance wise. I was like, oh my God, they're so in love. And Ben Affleck is so beautiful. So there's that. But like, before we get into that, we should probably talk about, I don't know, the like, you know, as if people don't already know who's in this cast, who made the movie, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, man. OK, so that's the thing about this movie. So I want to say this right up front, too, because I've been like holding this in and I kept saying it to my wife last night.
I'm nervous to do this one with you. After I watched it last night, I was like, he is going to tear this fucking movie apart. And I'm over here crying mess.
Yeah, no,
true
probably.
True or false, Tom?
Well, here's the thing. So I have seen the Barbie movie. You're going to see the Barbie movie. And
today.
Okay, yes. And there'll be a pod. The next episode will be about Barbie, which I won't be in because it is very much a female empowerment movie. That's not a surprise to anybody. Most people who have seen it especially understand what I'm saying. This movie, as we're watching it, and I was watching it with my wife, who you'll be doing the episode of Barbie with, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this is the opposite of Barbie. It's the complete opposite.
Okay.
It is, first off, you have to put this into perspective. This is 1998, right?
Yes.
A year earlier, we had Independence Day, which was a big deal.
Well, I feel like these were the like 10 years of blockbuster movies, right? Where we all ignored plot holes. We ignored things because we just wanted a good popcorn, see it in the movie theater movie.
Yeah. But that was the thing is this movie, this is the most Michael Bay movie ever made. You know, people always reference like Transformers and stuff. No. This is the most Michael Bay movie I've ever seen. The other thing you have to remember, too, put yourself back into 1998, right? This is...
I never left, it's easy
for me. Pre-9/11, right? America, like, had no concept of anything bad happening at a major scale. There were, like, little things here and there, you know, like, you know, things obviously happened in the world, but we didn't have 9/11. We didn't have COVID. And so the thing that always stands out to me, especially in these, like, pre-2000s, especially pre-2001 kind of movies, is like when the president's giving an address and people are, you know, Michael Bay's doing that swooping shot of like people sitting in an old Ford from like 1940 something.
I love those shots.
That is like the people who, you know, talk about patriotism and stuff like that. It is a wet dream that is just sweeping shots of like farmland, people sitting in an old pickup truck with like an American flag waving.
Wait, I just said sign me up. I didn't mean for the other part. I meant just like, I like the emotion of those scenes.
Okay. And the other thing too is, and it's so clear, right? If you understand how movies are made, there's the second unit who goes out and shoots a lot of the B-roll, anything that has to, like, it doesn't involve the main cast. And it's funny because every time there's like a plot point about like, you know, something bad happening or like an asteroid piece coming into the atmosphere and destroying people and cities, there's all these like beauty shots of like whatever random city we're in for a second. It's like, all right, well, it hits New York, which it was obviously filmed in Los Angeles. It wasn't even filmed in New York. You can kind of tell. And asteroid pieces are blowing stuff up. There's by the way, we're 90s kids. So did you notice who the cab driver was in the beginning?
No.
Do you remember TGIF hanging with Mr. Cooper?
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, it was Mr. Cooper.
No.
It was. Yeah, that was. That's Mark Curry, comedian Mark Curry. Like he was the cab driver.
It's incredible.
Stereotypical tourist in the background going, I want to go shopping. And he's doing quips. And the other thing, too, I got to point out, I keep saying it was the opposite of Barbie. Every woman in this movie is minimized to being one of just like very few things. The first woman we meet in the entire movie, there is this guy who has like a giant telescope, and she comes in and she's just berating him like, I'm not your slave. Like, I'm not here to just give you
her
food.
Her name's Dottie, like, by the way. And that's Dottie. Who the asteroid's named after. Okay. What do you say? She's a soul psyching vicious bitch.
But that's the thing is like the first woman we meet in the movie, right, is completely minimized to just being like a, like just an annoying, you know, ball and chain wife who's nagging her husband. Literally, he's screaming, give me my damn address book or my phone book or whatever.
Go get the phone book.
Right. And it's played for like, oh, yeah, no, she should totally get the phone book. It's not played for like, oh, my God, this guy's like just berating his wife. It's the opposite. Every woman, even the female pilot, like towards the end of the movie, whose name I actually forgot, but I don't feel bad because it's a Michael Bay movie. It's not like it's an ingrained in you. Is sort of minimized to like, she's just running around the ship. My wife is like, wait, where did she come from? She's the whole movie at the end. She's just running around the ship, quote unquote, like getting it ready.
She's just like frantic. Like, oh, look at the hysterical woman.
Right. She's just running around with papers hysterical in her hands. And then when the ship doesn't start, the comic relief Russian guy is just like, you make it work like Russian parts. And then just hits it with a wrench and then it goes and that negates everything she's been working on.
I will tell you, there's like a feel good... Like, I love I love him. I love
the comic relief over the top stereotypical Russian guy.
Maybe the end of the comic relief Russian guy. I don't think maybe Stranger Things was the last time we're going to get the comic relief from the Russian character. I don't think we're going to be getting a lot of Russian characters written into our movies for a while. Just saying.
The guy who played him, Peter Stormare, I hope I'm saying that right. He was in a bunch of movies on the other end of the spectrum, aside from playing stereotypical. Like, he was in Fargo. He was like one of the guys in Fargo, if you remember.
Yes.
He was in The Big Lebowski, so he was in a few of the Coen Brothers movies, too. Very funny guy. But, yeah, and there's a lot of, like, characters thrown in for, like, it's comic relief. You know, that's basically Steve Buscemi's character, which is fine. I'm not trashing that.
Have we talked about this, that my childhood best friend's mom is convinced that my fiancé looks like Steve Buscemi? Have we talked about this?
No, and he does not look like Steve Buscemi.
Hold on, though. Okay. Right now, Google the Steve Buscemi's FDNY picture when he was in the FDNY. And she thinks my fiance is like the most handsome man. And she thinks Steve Buscemi is the most handsome man. But she always says young Steve Buscemi.
No.
You don't see it?
I don't see it. No.
Even him. He sees it.
No.
All right.
Who have I said before that your fiance looks like?
Well, everyone tells me he looks like a crossbreed of Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake if they had a love child.
No, remember right now.
I think young Brendan Fraser.
Yes. I think I said young Brendan Fraser.
He said he got that in college a lot. So.
Okay. I don't know. There's a lot.
And that's good for my lady lines. So we like that. But back to the movie. Steve Buscemi and Billy Bob Thornton. There was a time where everyone was like, I guess Steve Buscemi said at like a table read or something. He's like, why are me and Billy Bob here? Like, why are we in this movie? And Michael Bay straight up said it's because we needed like legitimate actors, like actors in the movie. Yeah. And that's why they got the two of them. But also, if you remember in the 90s, even Billy Bob Thornton said he's like, he was used to playing such very serious roles.
Yeah.
But I feel like this was the beginning of him playing some sort of presidential, right? Like he just keeps popping up as presidents, FBI agents after this.
Yeah, I was going to say like we're talking like mid or late 90s Billy Bob Thornton. Like he was in a few other movies, but you're right. He always played like a character with like a nuance to it. Like he was in A Simple Plan in 1998 also, which is like where he kind of plays like someone with like a mental disability. And they're also, is that the one where they're thieves also? Or am I confusing that with a, I think I'm confusing that.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see it.
He was in Sling Blade a couple of years before that, right? Which was
Definitely like character acting.
Right.
And then after this, all of a sudden he becomes like, he's always the head government official or the head of the Secret Service or the president.
I will say, side note, did you ever see the Fargo TV series?
Yeah, of course I have. Freaking love
amazing
it.
Amazing in that. Like it's the first so season, good. Yeah.
He plays the very sexist asshole American president in Love Actually.
That's yeah. He's the one who hits on
Hugh Grant's
love
lady.
Interest there. Yeah, exactly.
Back to the movie. So if you haven't seen this movie, don't know what the fuck to tell you. It's probably going to be real life soon. Who knows? We have aliens now, but essentially there is an asteroid the size of Texas, which is impossible, flying to Earth, and they only have 18 days before it hits and kills everybody. And so in order to break the asteroid up, they have to drill into it. So they think, let's get some oil riggers and oil drillers to come train them to be astronauts in 1 week, and we will bring them up into space and we will have them drill 300 feet or was it 300
feet? 800
feet.
800 feet. Yeah.
Bruce Willis is like, I have never missed my mark. So that is it.
Yeah.
That's the story.
And famously now, I think the InSync podcast played the clip on their episode as well. The commentary to this movie, but going back to like DVDs, has Ben Affleck doing some commentary, and part of it he basically pokes holes in the entire concept and plot of the movie and talks about how he mentioned it to Michael Bay and he just told him to shut up.
Shut the fuck up, actually.
Shut the fuck up, yeah.
Yeah. He said, this is a real plan. This is one of NASA's real plans.
The logic he broke was, you're saying that it's easier to train oil drillers to become astronauts than train astronauts in 1 week. That's the other thing, too. The whole concept of time in this movie is so frustrating.
Incredible. They have just found out in the course of 24 hours that they're going to be going on this mission. And in the course of 24 hours, AJ, played by Ben Affleck, has now purchased his own oil company, With a sign. I caught that too. He's already working it.
Can I just tell you the way they set that up too? And it doesn't make any sense. It clearly feels like almost like something they injected after, because they're in the South China Sea, which is where we meet them and on their oil rig.
Mm-hmm.
And for random reasons, because this is really what happens, like investors or whoever it is come to visit the oil rig, and then all of a sudden everything goes wrong and oil is all over the rich people and everything.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis Incredible. Owns an oil rigging company. That's that part of the plot. He fires Ben Affleck, AJ Frost.
Because he's fucking his daughter.
Right. And then in the midst of that, that's when the government says, you know, Bruce, come with us. And then they take him to Texas, right? Because they take him to like the NASA facility in Texas. So they go from the South China Sea to Texas. Then in Texas, they reveal the whole plan. And the next day, again, to your point, and 24 hours later, that's when they introduce Bruce Willis to like, oh, here are all the astronauts who've been training to be oil drillers. And then the giant plot hole there of like, okay, no, he's like, no, I need my men. They're the best. Right. And then he's like, well, all right, he's going to go out and get his men now. The FBI.
Don't you dare gloss over that scene, because that's the best. When he starts naming each of them and they show where they are in real time.
Yes.
I love it.
They're all degenerates. Michael Clark Duncan, RIP, was just being chased by the FBI and helicopter. Again, very Michael Bay, just helicopters and,
I love it.
And cars and just all the generic police characters is always funny to me in the Michael Bay movies. But then in the midst of like the FBI rounding everybody up, then he somehow flies to wherever Ben Affleck is. And even just say, okay, let's say he's in Florida. Let's say he's like off in the Gulf Coast now all of a sudden. Yes, the camera shows up. We enter the scene and there's a giant sign that's like AJ Frost drilling, AJ Frost, president of the company or whatever. And it's just like in 24 hours, he got fired and then started his own company and he's at work already. It's like he's working covered on a job. Oil.
He's already gone out to rig. He's oiled.
There's so much oil work. You can literally buy a company and like be in it within like 24 hours.
24 hours.
And then my favorite part after that too is, and this is what's weird, there's some continuity thing messed up here. And this is why I'm like, I feel like this is one of those things where someone's like, oh, there's got to be a scene where like, you know, Bruce Willis's character goes and tries to lure Ben Affleck's character back, because we see Bruce Willis at the center, like NASA center in Texas, then cut. Suddenly he's on an oil rig or like a shore where Ben Affleck has a company now, convinces him to come back. And then it cuts back and then they're all getting out of cars. Because the FBI rounded everybody up at the exact same time, wherever they were on the planet, and they all just arrive at the Kennedy, not Kennedy Space Center, but like the one in Texas, all at the same time.
Yeah.
They just all, like all they their cars pull up to the hotel. They got cheeky from the craps
table at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas.
And then all of a sudden, Bruce Willis is like wearing the same clothes he was before he went to go see Ben Affleck. Like, it almost like it never happened. It's almost like the scene was inserted somehow. So, makes absolutely no sense. A lot of logic burning here in general. The other one that I'll give credit, I think my son picked up on. He's like, doesn't it take like a month to get to the moon? And I'm like, I forget how long it actually is, but it's not within hours. And so they go into space in modified space shuttles, which I'll get back to that in a second.
Okay.
I don't need to fully tear down the logic of this movie, right? The movie itself doesn't care about logic too much. So like the fact that they're using space shuttles when the whole point of a space shuttle was to, you know, go into lower orbit and, you know, into space and then come back. It doesn't have, that's why it's like, oh, why didn't we just send a space shuttle to the moon? Because you can't do that. Like there's reasons in rocket science. That's why they use the other rockets with little capsules and fly them that way. You can't just jettison a, you know,
okay,
NASA space
Tom,
shuttle.
But guess what NASA didn't have before this?
What's that?
Bruce
Oil
Willis.
Drillers?
Bruce Willis. Okay.
And I also find it funny too. It's like, aside from William Fichtner, there's just like generic NASA pilot person, generic NASA tech. There are people who like literally are on the spaceship with them. Their roles are called like NASA tech. But yeah, then they continue on to space. They randomly stop at the space station to refuel so we can have another like action element there. And then they continue on to space and then slingshot around the moon within a couple hours after going into space.
Obviously. Duh.
And after they do that, then they have like 8 hours to actually land on the moon before it hits the planet. So it took them how long to get to the asteroid? And then it's going to take 8 hours Yeah.
Now, one of the things, and I will say, I remember watching this at my dad's house one weekend. My dad is a mechanic.
Yeah.
He also likes this movie. There's like a scene where Bruce Willis is like tearing apart the like drill that NASA created.
Yeah, it's like when they and first get like, introduced to like, it, yeah, and they're like pulling parts out. This is never
going to work.
Yeah. What's this, my dad, big ice cream scoop?
Yeah, my dad being like, as if NASA doesn't know how to build a transmission. Yeah. This is so stupid. He's like, this tranny is never going to work.
That's what I mean is like, this movie is just like, to go back for a second, you do realize in the beginning of the movie, when we get introduced to Bruce Willis, he's hitting golf balls off his oil rig and trying to hit people on a Greenpeace protest boat. That's the opening of our introduction into.
Oh, it sure is.
But like,
I'm just going to say this.
Yeah,
I can do this. And I don't know that you can. Okay. And I certainly know that Kyle, who is our fellow podcaster of Gotham West, I know that he cannot.
Uh-huh.
I can turn the logical part of my brain off when watching movies like this to enjoy the other part. I don't think that you can do that from a movie watching because you're too well versed in the cinematic world. Where I'm like, you are like, he's doing this shot for this reason. Where I'm just like, this is magical. And this whole movie, I think, is you have to live in the brain space of, wow, look at this. It's so beautiful. Otherwise, it's a pile of poop.
You're kind of right. And I'll say this. I can suspend belief for a lot of things, right? I absolutely can. It is in my wheelhouse to suspend belief for certain things. But there are certain things where it's like, it's one thing to be like, all right, hey, NASA took the space shuttles and they created new versions of them that are kind of built for combat or whatever the hell they were supposed to be built for. Because when we're explained like why they built these drilling machines, why they built, you know, the spaceship that ends up going to the asteroid, it's all because they were supposed to be doing a mission to the moon, right?
Yes.
And so it's like, all right, suspend belief. This is why they're doing it, or this is why they built this. That's all fine. I get it. The space shuttle's not meant to actually go outside lower orbit, but okay, I can suspend belief for a second and, you know, whatever it might be. Those are things where it's like, all right, in this world, in this universe, this is what they did or this is what they built. I'm even fine for them to do things like they were saying like, oh, the skin of the space shuttle is made out of titanium, which in reality, it wouldn't be because they would burn alive inside, right? Because that's the whole reason we have like the... In fact, we had a space shuttle way after this movie was released that lost a little spongy tile and exposed like the metal of the underside of the spacecraft, and it just exploded on reentry.
Okay? Now, is it true that they use actual space launches for the footage for when the space shuttle launches?
I don't know that. I was watching it.
It was in one of my fun facts.
I was going to say watching it. Well, for and that's the other thing too. Can we there's a lot of things.
Oh, they filmed two launches at the Kennedy Space Center in Orlando. The first was done during the daytime to practice getting camera angles and lighting.
Yeah.
The night launch was super intense. John Schwartzman, the director of photography, said that they're only done every 18 months. And if they didn't get it right, there is no second chance. So that is probably why the launches look so realistic, because they are the only realistic part of the movie.
That said, they launched two space shuttles next to each other.
Yeah.
Now, is it like, oh, well, they have to do that because they got to get up there nice and quick? Or it's like, no, it's just cool because then they can like roll over each other and it's cool. Like the one in front is jettisoning its rocket booster, and there's another space shuttle with human beings right behind it in the path of like getting hit by a.
It's incredible.
Drop. Yeah. No, that's the thing, too. It's like there's stuff in the movie. And this is why I said it's peak Michael Bay. Is it's just because it's for that factor of like you were exactly talking about, suspend all belief and just be like, whoa, explosions.
That's what I have to do.
Here's the thing. Now I feel like I'm being too snobbish.
No, not at all. I'm just saying that I can become the fifth grader again when I watch movies like this, where like you have too much knowledge where even if you tried to, you'd be like, I know why you're doing that shot. I know what the camera's doing there. I know, it's really funny. You just put that in there.
Compared to the other asteroid movie of 1998, right? Which is a little bit more realistic, but also really sad. Because it's like, oh, there's a giant asteroid coming. There's literally nothing we can do.
Nothing
all we can
you
do
can
is
do.
Go hide
You're
in the mountain.
Dying.
We're all going to die. Tay Leone's going to go sit on a beach because her dad like made her like, yeah, there you go. Why all the asteroid movies have to have like dad things?
I don't want to talk about it.
But here's the thing. I'm fine with action set pieces. I'm fine for all that. This is just, it's Michael Bay. And he just like does things for the sake of like, it's cool. It is a movie that could have been written by a 10-year-old who's just like, and then the space shuttles, they shoot off at the same time. Like, I just imagine a 10-year-old just explaining the plot to this movie as they're coming up with the ideas.
I do remember reading somewhere that Michael Bay was like super pissed because the costumes, like their space suits were so bad. And he was like super pissed because it was like right before they were supposed to start shooting. He's like, we cannot use these. So they look like Adidas track suits. And then they eventually landed on those like orangey, reddish space suits. And I even remember seeing those and being like, that just doesn't. Why are they orange?
Well, that was the thing, too. Did you pick up on the fact that the drillers are wearing orange and the NASA people are wearing blue? And then at the end of the mission, there are two blue suits walking off. And the one thing that was kind of funny to me, too, is we obviously lose a lot of characters through the movie. And some are their deaths are played over the top and some are just like, oh, man, he died.
I know. That's it. I know. I was like, they have favorites. We're done. No grieving.
Yeah. Like when Owen Wilson dies, like there's an entire scene where I was like, oh, who is? I can't even tell who that is in the costume. Right. Just Owen Wilson died when they crashed into the asteroid. And then Max, the guy who's drilling, is just like, hey, Harry, and just screams Harry's name. And then the armadillo thing that they're driving around just goes into space. They're like, oh, man, well, he's
gone
now.
Owen Wilson, he has like one of the funniest lines to me of this whole movie when he's like asking him, he's like, what's it going to be like when we get up there? And the guy's like, oh, it's going to be like negative 200 degrees in the shade and 200 degrees Celsius in the sun and rocks that are super sharp. And he's like, okay, cool. So like the scariest environment imaginable. Yeah. That's all you had to say. Scariest environment imaginable.
And by the way, because again, Michael Bay, it was 2000 degrees. It was negative 2000 and then 2000 degrees. It's like, okay, geez, like, man, can you just take it down a notch into reality? Like, it's like, it's going to be hot up there, Michael. Like what, like, so what's hot? He's like 2000 degrees. All right, girl, calm down, man. There should be explosions.
Well,
there's also wind on the asteroid when there's no air.
I was just going to say that.
Like, this movie was made by an 11-year-old. It really was just like, you know, oh man, everything about it.
They said that they shot the climax first. Like they shot that scene first. And I'm not trying to sound like a dick, but like you can feel that they shot that scene first. Like the chemistry between everybody is like not there yet.
Yeah.
And say what you want. I still cry my eyes out when AJ is trying to go out to blow up the asteroid, be the one that does it. And then Harry unplugs him so he can't breathe and throws him back in there. And he's like, that's my job. He's like, your job is take care of my little girl.
Yeah.
And then he takes his patch off and he's like, give it to whatever the guy's name is. Make sure he gets it. But that scene with Liv Tyler and her dad, it's really sad. And I cry every time.
Wait. Okay. You talking about the one where over like the video call at the end?
Yes, but there's no chemistry there. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. If my dad was about to die and I'm about to watch it live streaming with an extra 1,000 people, I'm not going to be like pretty crying. Like, no, dad, no.
You know what? Let's actually start there.
Okay.
So, we got to get back.
They shot that scene first.
Right. And it's peak Michael Bay again. Mm-hmm. But like, let me back up for a second. So they slingshot around the moon. They get on the asteroid. There's a point when they're like, oh, we're having trouble communicating with them. We have about 7 minutes left of communications. But then, well, we can bounce it off a Russian satellite and that'll give us 12 minutes that we can like send the nuclear detonation thing remotely. And it's like, all right, cool. So now, all right, they have 12 minutes tops, right? That time expires. They do the thing. There's the entire thing where Bruce Willis is fighting with William Fincher over detonating the bomb. They come to like an agreement together because like he's a man of his word, you know, not reality. Like this guy can't promise he's going to blow up the asteroid properly. But oh, well, William Fincher, who was like the heel for a moment, then turns around and is like, I'm on your side, Bruce. And then communication is fine again, sort of, to the point when at the end, Bruce Willis is having a two-way FaceTime call.
Crystal clear.
The whole of the time they need to like communicate important information. They're like, oh, they can't hear us. We can only hear them. Like the signal's going out. Oh, we lost communications. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, honey, like, and like all the screens, like, again, for no apparent reason, let's just put Bruce Willis's face on every screen in this room. And Liv Tyler can have the entire control room to herself just for a moment to have this important conversation. And again, because every woman in this movie has to be minimized, he's like, hey, honey, I'm breaking that promise. And she's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? What is wrong? Have you been watching this the whole time? Oh. Because she's just a silly woman. She doesn't understand. So anyway, the whole communication thing just doesn't make any sense. Here's my point. I can suspend belief on things, but don't break your own rules. You created a rule that like, oh, after they slingshot it around the moon, now the asteroid's twisting, so we're not going to have communication with them. It's like, oh no, that's bad. That makes this more difficult. That increases. And then they just throw that out the window once that single reason of the nuclear explosion thing was just like put aside. Now suddenly communication's fine.
Well, yeah. That's called Michael Bay science. Did you know that they show this movie to the new NASA recruits?
No, they don't.
I swear to God. As a lesson to find mistakes. And there's over 1,000 of them.
Okay.
So they have to watch the movie and make lists of the mistakes that they see. And I guess there's like 1,086 or something like that. It's over 1,000.
Like mistakes and like things they do. Like, I don't know, like.
Everything.
Hitting parts with wrenches.
How it looks, how the spaceship looks, what they're wearing.
I like that. It's like a Where's Waldo for what is all the bad things.
Okay, this is the article that I read about it. Why NASA sometimes shows the movie Armageddon as part of training. Because one of the most unrealistic movies ever made about space is Armageddon. Literally okay. The first line.
Thank
the first
you.
Line.
Thank you, NASA. The first line. I can appreciate that. I'm on board with it. I'm on board. Yep.
Oh, I lied. It's 186. I use okay. Michael Bay hyperbole.
Michael Bay math?
Yeah, so it's 186, not 1,086. That's my bad.
I couldn't hold this all back, but now that I've sort of unleashed all my fury against this, I feel bad because you're just like, oh man, it brings you back to a place of like...
Oh, I love it. There's nothing you can do to make me not love this movie. I love that also Michael Bay has got like such a touch of narcissism that he throws himself as cameos in all these movies he makes.
I noticed that.
He's one of the astronauts in this one.
No, wasn't he a scientist or something?
Yeah, scientist in NASA. And then he's like driver in Bad Boys.
Oh,
he's in all these hilarious. I'm like, what are you doing? He even makes himself a photographer in Coyote Ugly.
Wait, he was in Coyote Ugly?
Yeah, he's a photographer in Coyote Ugly.
Did? No, but did he do Coyote Ugly?
No, he made a cameo. But one thing about this is it's like famously known that oil rigs don't let production sets on their rigs because it's number one, super dangerous. And number two, really fucks up their timelines for what they're doing.
Okay.
This is one of the only movies that were actually shot on a real functioning oil rig. And
really?
Michael Bay had sweet talked this oil rig. Yeah. And he basically said, like, this is really good representation for oil riggers. That's kind of what we want to do is show, like, how hard their job is and how they are very smart. And, you know, people treat them like shit. So they were like, yeah, let's do that. And so he was able to get on the Garden Banks oil rig, 180 miles from the Gulf of Texas.
Wow.
And they went out there the day before, set up lighting, and then they shot on there for 4 days. And one of my other fun facts that I love, you remember the dog that's biting the Godzilla?
Yes.
That dog was paid $20,000 a day.
Come on.
$20,000 a day. If he worked for 3 days, he makes more money a year than I do.
All right. I don't know if you actually know this answer.
Okay. I'll try.
Do you remember what was going on in like the late 90s when it came to like all these like tentpole movies?
Do I remember what's going on?
Yeah.
No.
So this sounds really vague, but I'm saying like...
Puberty for me. So what's going on in my house?
Independence Day came out in 1996, right? Mm-hmm. Then in like 97, I'm not saying these are the exact ones, but yeah, like Con Air in 1997, 1998 is Armageddon. And then 1999, I believe, and I'm trying to figure it out right now because I forget what year it was. But you have, it was 1998. It was the same year this came out that the Godzilla movie came out. And so I wasn't sure if the dog biting the Godzilla toy in the beginning is like a dig at Roland Emmerich. Because Roland Emmerich is the guy who did Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this movie, which came out that same year. And it's the same, like, Godzilla, or like whatever the sound effect they used for the 98 Godzilla. It's the same exact one. And I feel like Michael Bay was essentially going back and forth with Roland Emmerich over, like, oh, who's the biggest, like, action movie director for, like, these summer blockbusters? Roland Emmerich, for context, did Stargate, Independence Day. He did Godzilla. Godzilla was the one that everyone was like, oh, this is going to be the biggest movie of the summer. It was like, literally, I'll never forget. It was like the ball dropped in Times Square on New Year's Eve. And then everyone celebrated. And then they went to commercial. And the first commercial was all about Godzilla. It was like a teaser for Godzilla coming that summer. So like the moment we entered 1998, it was like, oh, this is going to be the year of Godzilla, which was great marketing. But the movie tanked. Nobody liked it.
Womp womp. Probably except my fiance.
But I guess they would be filming at the same time. They'd be filming at the same time. Godzilla came out in May, and then Armageddon came out at the end of June. So,
I mean, that makes sense. I feel like, why do you think it is that these like big blockbuster chunks of movies, they just don't happen anymore? COVID suspended a lot of projects for a lot of people, right? So let's take the last 3 years off the table.
Yeah.
But like, this just doesn't happen anymore like it did in the late 90s, early 2000s, right?
I'll take it back here too, right? Because I think if you look at the ones that changed, I think number one, 9/11 happening. Because again, all the ones before this were like giant world ending.
That's a good point.
Like world under, like, you know, we're on the edge of Independence Day, even Godzilla, right? Like Armageddon. All
Titanic,
these movies are like,
was 1998 too, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But I think with all those like summer blockbusters, like the big ones, right? I put Titanic outside of it, but a lot of these things were like, oh my God, and the world almost, you know, ended kind of thing. And you compare that to the ones that we have now when it comes to like, oh, like the world could end at any moment. And they're all like superhero movies. They're all like things that are like, you can suspend a lot of belief because this is not the real world.
Yeah.
I think back then, like I remember like seeing Twister and being like, oh my God, I'm afraid of tornadoes now. Armageddon.
Me. Oh, we have to do Twister. I need to bring my sister on. When I say we watch Twister, I wish this was an exaggeration. Well over 100 times.
Yeah.
We wanted to be storm chasers like you would not believe.
Oh, yeah.
We were like, let's save the soda cans.
Yeah.
So we can build our own machine. Whatever the fuck it was.
The Dolly. Dorothy.
Dorothy, I think you're right that it got too close to reality.
Yeah. Once we had like real, and then all of a sudden everything turned into, you know, Spider-Man and superheroes and X-Men. X-Men and Spider-Man are really the ones that kind of kicked off the superhero resurgence in like the early 2000s. Because those were the first ones that were like, oh, wow, superhero movies. Because all we had at that point was Batman. And remember, even at the end of the 90s, Batman became Batman and Robin, where it was like, you know, Batman pulls out his charge card. You know, it became campy like the 60s show. So anyway, to answer your question, why don't we have these anymore? I think it became too real. And now everything is like, oh, suspend belief. We'll do Star Trek. You know, we're in space. We're in the future.
It's such a good point. And like to bring COVID back into it, it's kind of the same way where a lot of people, when the television shows, when their production stopped, when they picked back up.
Yeah.
People got pissed at Grey's Anatomy because Grey's Anatomy, which I understand why they did it. It is a show about a hospital and medical and like all this stuff. Of course, they're going to have a portion of the show that was COVID. But for people, it was like, no, it's still happening. I do not want to be watching this on TV. I'm already going through it. There's no escape for me here. So I get why people did not want to see COVID portrayed on television because it's still too close.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Like, I mean, even 9/11 movies, they didn't come out for years and years and years and years and years. Until it became like, okay, it's safe now to put this out there. It's not triggering like that flight. Was it flight 93
or whatever? 93.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
don't forget.
I get
there were a bunch of those. Like there was like the one with Nicolas Cage that came out. Like there was a bunch of those. And even but again, even those, they didn't necessarily do that well because I think it played on a lot of the things that I think Michael Bay tends to do, which is even in like Transformers, like there's a giant robot thing with like an American flag in slow-mo falling behind it kind of thing. Like that's Michael Bay. It's all about patriotism, middle America, salt of the earth, you know, just all these like things to sort of ramp up people. It's placating to a crowd. I'll put it that way.
For show, but, for show.
But I think the difference is in 1998, we were like unabashed, like, yes. You know, it didn't matter who you were. It's like, yeah, no, I'm proud of America. Like we're Americans. Yay. And then it's really funny because juxtapose this with like, you ever watch The Newsroom on HBO?
Yeah.
Like with like the entire show kicks off with Will McAvoy giving a speech about why America is not the greatest nation in the world, right? Juxtapose Michael Bay's shots of farmland and people and middle America people, kids running around in slow motion with a space shuttle playing, you know, because they're proud to be Americans.
I love
to
it.
America is not the greatest nation in the world. I think we've, again, there was an audience for this. And back then it was just like, oh, America. Like, keep in mind, you know, the entire world's about to end. And who's going to save us? America. It's the American astronaut.
Not just America, but like
that one drillers. Russian astronaut who was left on the space.
He's so funny. I like him.
That's what he's there for.
We're not going to dive into it because we're not going to do nearly as good of a job as the NSYNC podcast would do. But you can't think Armageddon without I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
No.
Performed by Aerosmith.
I will say I had a conversation with Rachel and Aviv months ago, and offhand, we were chatting on Slack, and I just said, man, can you guys do an episode on Aerosmith's I Don't Want to Miss a Thing? Because for me,
not written by Aerosmith, by the way.
I didn't know that until they mentioned it in their podcast. Yeah. The thing that's amazing to me is like Aerosmith was a classic rock band. Like it's like my dad listened to that even in like the 90s, right?
Because I listened to that.
No, that's fair, but like their hits were all like in the 80s and like even like creeping into early 90s, right? Like that was crazy and like songs like that was the closest you got. By 1998, Aerosmith wasn't pumping out hits. And then all of a sudden this comes out and beyond that, it's not even a rock song. Like there's an orchestra. And I'm like, how did this come together, right? Again, go listen to the NSYNC podcast, but like...
Sure, I'll just touch on it, but this is right coming off of the heels of Celine Dion with Titanic, My Heart Will Go On. Right. So that is like a massive power ballad hit. Yeah. And Diane Warren, who's a songwriter, wrote the song, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. But it was originally, I Don't Want to Kiss a Thing. I don't think that's correct. But that's what it says here on We Can Blame Looper.com. But she wanted a pop diva, like another like a Celine Dion situation. Yeah. And she said there was an interview with Barbara Streisand and her husband that she saw, and she said that her husband doesn't like to go to sleep because he misses her. And so Diane Warren was like, that would make a great song. Like, I don't want to go to sleep because I'd miss you.
Yeah.
And that became like the central theme to I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Yeah.
But then the filmmakers really wanted Aerosmith to play the song, where she really wanted like a female to do it. So they...
Why Aerosmith? Was there a reason for that?
I don't know. They wanted Steven Tyler's vocals and emotions. So in order to try and convince him to do it, because why the fuck is Aerosmith be like, yeah, I'll pass on this. But his daughter is the lead. So they showed them an early rough cut of the film.
Oh, wow.
And when Liv Tyler is crying and she yells daddy and is like crying and her tears are coming down, he's like, fine, I'll do it. I'll do the song. I'll do it.
All right.
Whether that's true or not.
Yeah, because but that makes
there's
more
already
sense.
A typo in this article. I don't want to kiss a thing. Not right. It was I don't want to miss a thing. Whether that's true or not, head over to the NSYNC podcast. They'll probably set us straight. No. But I guess that's something that Steven Tyler said when he was talking to MTV News.
That's fair.
That's fair.
But like that summer, I remember you couldn't get away from that song. It was just everywhere. It was the song of the summer.
It was.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people that said no to these parts.
Oh, alternate universe. Who
alternate universe. So Michael Bay on the film commentary said that his initial approach to Armageddon, he thought about Sean Connery, who he just worked with on The Rock, would be Harry Stamper. Mm-hmm. Sean Connery's Harry Stamper wouldn't have sold it for me.
Yeah, no, I can't.
Then he said that he went for Bruce Willis because he realized that real life roughnecks, which I guess is what you call people in an oil rig. If that is derogatory, I do apologize, wouldn't be sold. and they wouldn't be like the head of the oil rigger, I guess, wouldn't be as old as Connery was at the time.
Okay.
They would be much younger. Yeah. And then Skeet Ulrich was really popular from Scream. So he thought that he would be good as AJ.
Yeah.
And he says, I turned down a couple of films just to do Armageddon. And then I turned down Armageddon and Ben Affleck got the part, which is hilarious. And also Nev Campbell was offered Liv Tyler's role and she turned it down.
I could have seen that.
Yeah, me too.
But what's funny, I mean, if you think about that, if Liv Tyler didn't do the role, would we have even gotten
We wouldn't have gotten
song?
Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Wowie kabowie. I just want to say that, like I talked about in the beginning, the scene with Chick and he like goes to the house and he's obviously an absent father and his ex-wife is like, that's a salesman. And I'm like so sad for him. And then at the end, when everybody comes back and they're heroes and he's like walking so sad because he's like, no one's here for me. And then the little boy who doesn't know him is apparently just accepted. This is my daddy now and just like runs to him with open arms. Again, I had to suspend belief and then I was like, oh, it's so beautiful. But then also at the same time, I'm like, no, you're an absent fucking father. That kid is not running to you. Like I can barely get my niece to run to me. Well, and I babysit her once a week.
Well, that's the thing. You don't understand what happened. See, when he was a deadbeat father, she wouldn't allow him to see.
Yes.
The, like,
I know.
And then
I know.
He's like, Mom, the salesman's on TV. And suddenly it's like, that's your father.
And now then that he's now got a spaceship toy.
Also, at the end there, too, when everyone's like, you know, getting like they let anyone in because it's like, all right, yeah, that's his estranged ex-wife or baby mom. We don't really know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Steve Buscemi has like the prostitute or stripper or whatever it was, like run up and hug him. Again, another woman who is just like, you're just a sex worker. That's your role. That's who you are. No woman in this movie at all. Zero. The closest you get is Commander Watts, I think her name is. I forget. Then is also upstaged by the Russian guy who just hits it with a wrench and then saves the day. She's running around the ship with papers, reading.
Not a great movie for feminists, I'll tell you.
Again, opposite of Barbie.
Not great.
Literally the opposite.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
But I will say, too, I make fun of Michael Bay a lot, and he deserves it, right? Because, okay, so we have, he did Bad Boys, The Rock, Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, Bad Boys 2, Island, which I think is probably, like, the biggest departure from his style a little bit. Then you have, like, the Transformers trilogy. Then he did this movie called Pain and Gain. Do you ever see that? With Mark Wahlberg, Dwayne Johnson?
No, I didn't see that, and I can't believe I haven't, because my fiance would leave me for Dwayne Johnson in a heartbeat. So I thought I've seen his full catalog.
Well, the reason I wanted to mention it is because, first off, I do recommend seeing it. It has a terrible, terrible reviews on like Rotten Tomatoes and all those.
It's fine. I don't go by those anyway.
Right. But here's the thing. Michael Bay's schlock of like slow-mo and explosions and sweeping shots and all these other things, it's always like, oh, like eye rolling, kind of like, all right, now you're just doing this because you think it's cool. You're like literally like an adolescent boy. Pain and Gain is the only movie he's ever made where it's almost done tongue in cheek. It's sort of making fun of his style because it is a comedy. Like it's a dark comedy, but it's done funny. And so all like the stylistic shots and stuff sort of connect to the mentality of these guys who think they're cool and think that this is all cool. So I recommend it if it's done in that aspect where it's just like, yeah, no, it's not taking itself seriously. And it's almost making fun of the Michael Bay movies. Yeah.
Here's the thing. And I didn't know that until I did research for this last night, late night. Michael Bay is kind of a dick to the people he puts in his leads.
Yeah.
He made Ben Affleck. Mm-hmm. He took it out of the movie's budget. But he spent $20,000 on Ben Affleck's teeth for this movie. Did you know that?
I only know it because of NSYNC. They mentioned it in their episode.
Oh, my fucking God. And when they were making Pearl Harbor, I guess he told Kate Beckinsale she needed to lose weight in order to be the lead. Like, she had to lose weight. And so she was, I guess, griping about it to Ben Affleck. And he was like, listen, he made me sit into a dentist chair 8 hours a day for an entire week to get new teeth. And she was like, well, I guess it's cool. I get to hang on to my teeth, but I'm just fat, according to him. And it's so funny, too, because when Steve Buscemi found out that that's what he was doing for, he was like, I want new teeth. And Michael Bay was like,
what about
no,
me, Michael?
You can't get new teeth. You need to have bad teeth.
It's almost like they took all of Ben Affleck's bad teeth and gave it to my Steve gave it Buscemi. To,
oh,
yeah. Also, is that the only Kate Beckinsale movie that wasn't terrible?
Probably.
I'm sort of down on it.
Sorry, it's not her Kate. Fault.
I don't think she's a bad actress. I think she just does stuff and that's it. You know, she had her old Underworld series, you know, good for her. But there's something about all the movies that she's in. It's like, why are all these movies really bad? I don't understand it. I'm sorry. I feel bad for Kate Beckinsale. I really do.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Why don't we talk about the numbers for this movie? How much it cost and how much it ended up grossing? Because it was pretty impressive, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, especially like around this time, keep in mind, these are the movies that were like, we're going to dump so much money into this.
Oh my God. And how many times so did the back. Screenplay get rewritten? I know J.J. Abrams helped rewrite it.
I got to give you credit, or my wife really, because my wife said, she's like, oh, this is a J.J. Abrams movie? And I was like, no, J.J. Abrams isn't involved. She's like, I just saw his name in the credits. So I didn't realize, I guess he's still attached as a screenwriter for it, I guess. Is that
there were
correct?
So many people that rewrote this, and the Writers Guild of America was like, they had an arbitration committee that said only 5 people could attach their names to the movies and get the blockbuster boost on their credit resumes.
Yeah.
And so there were 8 other writers that were involved in this, and only 5 got credit. God.
And the way it's broken down too, you have screenplay by, adaptation by, story by. And then, is that it? Is there no written by? I think that's it.
That might be it, yeah.
So, it's broken down in such a weird way. Like, it's also like adaptation. It's like, adaptation from what? From the screenplay. Like, it's just...
I didn't know that J.J. Abrams... Oh my God, he was on Casper. He helped write Casper, yeah.
The one, the 90s one?
Yeah, the 1995 with Devin Sauer. Are you kidding me?
You know
where he says, can
really
I keep
well.
You? Oh my God, I reacted that to a pillow like 9 million times. So the movie cost...
I'm seeing $140 million budget, but I don't know what that...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
$140 million budget, and it became the highest grossing film in 98.
Yeah.
How much did it gross?
According to this, $553 million. So it made back almost 5 times what it cost.
Yeah, okay. That's a lot.
Oh, can I just also add to... And this is the other thing that I completely forgot. And I was like, I got to write this down because by the end, I'm going to forget it. Do you remember the beginning of the movie?
The very beginning?
So like the very beginning of the movie just gives you like a little like Charlton Heston narrative. Of course, it's got to be Charlton Heston, right? Because man's man. It's just Charlton Heston being like, before man, the dinosaurs ruled. And it's like this entire, literally like it's spoon feeding you like, all right, here's the world was hit by a meteor and the sun and all this other stuff. It just gives you this entire like explanation about how what happened to dinosaurs. For no reason.
Well, it's funny because the asteroid that hit the dinosaurs was only 6 miles wide.
This one's the size of Texas, sir.
Like 600 miles wide.
Yeah.
Tis not real, sir. Tis not real.
Again, Michael Bay math, where it's like...
It is Michael Bay math.
He was probably talking to the experts and they were like, so how big was the asteroid that hit the Earth that killed the dinosaur? 60 miles. All right. In our movie, it's going to be 600 miles. Multiply by 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000. That's how everything works in Michael Bay land.
There are so many things, you know, like we always talk about this. Does certain movie things in movies hold up?
Yeah.
They call Steve Buscemi the Hound because he's horny.
Oh,
and one
God.
Of the first scenes of the movie of him on the oil rig when the FBI is coming and he's like, Harry, I swear to God, she didn't tell me how old she was.
Yeah.
And then when the FBI is like Laugh rounding track. Them all up and he's in the bar and he's got his little monocle and he's looking
With
at
who?
The lady's ring.
No. Who's that lady?
Oh, I forget the actress's name.
We talked about her at length in another episode.
I forget
Shawnee
her name.
Smith.
Okay. Yes. And I didn't know her name then either. She says, oh, it's baked, beautiful diamond. He's like, no, it's not. And then the FBI comes. And what's the first thing he does? How old are you? So now we're just all going to love Steve Buscemi,
just laugh track.
The pedophile.
Yeah.
I but do like when he's like, get
both
off
ways.
The nuclear warhead and he's riding it like a...
Well, it's funny. He references it incorrectly also, right? Because he's doing the thing from the Peter Sellers movie.
Yeah.
But they didn't even get that right. It's okay. It's okay.
I really like it. This is the list of things where Amanda's just living in La La Land. And I'm like, oh, I love it. It's just still one of those movies. Like, it's the same way I feel when I watch movies like Saving Private Ryan and like all these movies that are people rewatch and like, oh my God, this was so corny. And we thought it was a cinematic masterpiece. I still think it's a cinematic masterpiece, even though this did not get the best reviews, right?
Yeah.
Did not.
I'm okay with that. There is a place for the Armageddons and for like the Independence Days and all these other movies. Like, I think that's fine. All like the world ending, like unless this one person saves everything, right? It's always one person. It's never a team. It's just one guy. And that's all fine, right? There's a place for that. I get that. I'm not opposed to that. And I actually enjoy it. Like, I think Independence Day was like one of my favorite movies for a long time too. Like, just that, you know, everything about it. I think Ronald Emmerich's better at it.
So now the big movies that people are going to have to make, since we can't make movies about aliens anymore because they're real. Yeah. We can't make movies about the world ending because it is. So now we're going to have to make movies about when things are nice and everyone's going, that's terrifying. And that would never happen.
I mean, we went from this to like Ted Lasso. So basically, yeah.
Yeah, so, you're right.
I mean, what's even funny too is, I don't know if you caught it. I don't know which version you watched or whatever.
I watched whatever was free for me on Amazon Prime. That's okay. What I watched.
Did your version have the World Trade Center with holes in it? And
oh my God. No. If it did, I didn't realize it. Full disclosure, I was imbibing.
Okay.
Well, whilst watching.
Some cuts of the movie have it cut out, but when all the meteors hit New York City, then there's this like panning shot and you see a like Swiss cheesed World Trade Center just standing there with holes in it. Completely ominous, especially like when this is three years before 9/11. So on rewatches and stuff, apparently it's been cut out and removed from the film in a lot of places. So
it's one of those things where like, maybe it's a very New York thing, very central to us at New York. Whenever I see the World Trade Center in any movie, I get like a feeling like a,
yeah,
like, ooh.
Yeah, because it's not like, oh, look, the sky, like the New York skyline has changed a lot, right? There's a lot of like little skinny Park Avenue buildings all over the place now. But obviously, like, I think the Twin Towers, the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building, like there's a handful of those that are like, oh, that's the New York City
skyline. It's the New York skyline.
Yeah. There's a bunch of movies like Die Hard with a Vengeance, right? Where like prominently in the background, you see like, oh, there's the World Trade Center right there. There it is. And so it's weird when it's gone. It's even weirder when there are all like giant holes in it because it got hit by something flying in the sky. So I get why it's cut out, but yeah. But anyway, I did notice that where I was like, oh, wow, I'm surprised that hasn't been cut out of versions. And then sure enough, versions that I did not watch had that cut out. So fun facts.
I don't know if mine did. I'll have to go back and watch.
It's not like they went back and added, you know, logic to the movie.
Facts. And I saw that in the same aspect, ABC is the ones, because obviously this and Forrest Gump are two of the most televised movies continuously on networks. And ABC, they took out, you know, the World Trade Center attacks. They took out that, and then following in 2003 the Columbia disaster, some of the screen captures from the opening scene where the Atlantis is destroyed, they took those out as well. FX took those off. It was supposed to air that night on FX, and FX canceled that very quickly and put Aliens on instead.
much better
because before it was like, oh well, at least we know this can't happen. Not now, folks.
Did you know there was a theme park attraction for the movie?
What? Where?
At Disneyland Paris had an attraction.
We need to go to these other Disneylands.
I can't pronounce this because I never took French.
I did.
Armageddon Les Effets Spéciaux. I can't do it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't see it.
It was an attraction based on the movie at Disneyland Paris. It simulated the scene in the movie in which the Russian space station is destroyed. And Michael Clark Duncan was featured in the pre-show. R.I.P. Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh.
He was great, man.
He was the best. We should do the Green Mile.
Man, I gotta...
It's so emotional, though.
It is. And that's the thing, too. It's like, all right, well, when do I want to cry? That's going to happen.
We'll time it with my menstrual cycle, Tom.
Michael Clark Duncan was great.
Incredible.
He was just a great actor. He was great in everything.
So that's Armageddon, folks. Hopefully this isn't a telltale sign of things to come. Imagine an asteroid's coming to the Earth and they're like, somebody call Michael Bay. He knows what to do.
No. You don't understand. In Michael Bay's, he would just show up and be like, hey, I heard there's an asteroid coming. Obviously, clearly I'm the most qualified.
I've brought with me Steve Buscemi, Bruce Willis.
It's like, sir, we have scientists. It's like, no, you need, they don't know anything about space.
They can't
space.
Build a tranny.
Yeah.
I can.
That was, yeah.
What did Dale think? Because you said she had never seen it.
Here's what's funny about it. My wife had never seen it before, and I don't know how she was feeling, but she was like playing Mystery Science Theater 3000 the whole movie, like pointing out all the plot holes and like, she'd be like, why is that happening? Didn't this just happen? I was like, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like this movie doesn't make any sense.
So, okay, let me just say, maybe because I've watched this movie as a 10-year-old the first time.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I can kind of suspend belief and like go back to that like warm, fuzzy feeling it gave me.
Yeah.
When I couldn't point out the logic.
For what it's worth, I think the movie is so schlocky and so pandering that for me, I can't help but watch it and be like, oh, like roll my eyes at how there's the shot, like when the shuttle's taking off and Liv Tyler is in a hangar for no reason. She's just in a hangar looking out through the window of the hangar. But that's because there's a giant American flag that's as the size of the hangar behind her. And there's flashes from the explosions of the shuttle and it's just lighting up the flag. And like the set pieces with lighting and everything just to show patriotism. Ugh, if you own any like clothing with the American flag on, I don't mean like the old Navy, like 4th of July things that all the kids had in 1998. I'm talking like if you have an entire t-shirt that is full bleed an American flag with some probably borderline
with the Punisher logo on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is your movie. This is the type of thing where, like, you know, someone with a beer cozy, drinking a beer, watching this movie.
Probably why my dad loves it.
Yeah. Every shot with a flag just being, yeah. Or like every time they put down those nerds for trying to build things. Like, they don't understand mechanics and engines and transmissions and any of that stuff. That's where it's like, oh, stupid, smart kids thinking they're going to understand drilling. Like, that's the stuff. That's
also, I just want to say characters like William Fichtner, his character, fucking have a volume. Like, I'm watching this. I'm like, this man has the worst anxiety issues of any person. Everything, every time I'm talking, it's just talking like this. Yeah. He's like freaking out. His veins are popping. I'm like, Mr. Fichtner, you know you got that good up there. You got Xanax. You got whatever you need. You need to take one.
I do love him, by the way. He is
William
Fichtner. Everything he's in. Do you ever see the movie Go? I had my brother-in-law watch that for the first time.
I love William Fichtner.
Yeah. Just how creepy and weird he is in the movie Go is great. He's in Contact. You know, he's in Independence Day Resurgence, too. I haven't seen that because, you know.
You know, like you have movies where, like, I watch this and it makes me think about how much I like watching this. Every time I watch Con Air, I think, like, oh, I should rewatch Armageddon. Every time I watch Armageddon, I'm like, I should rewatch Con Air. And I think it's strictly because Steve Buscemi is so good in both movies. Like, he's just such a fucking creep in both movies, and I love it.
By the way, that's the other thing too that's a little bit jarring for me is how Michael Bay is like, oh man, I loved how you were the weird guy in that movie. I'm making a new movie. I'm gonna cast you as the weird guy in my new movie. Like, everyone,
I'm not
just
fixing
plays
your teeth,
right? Yeah, I mean, even Ben Affleck, I'm surprised Ben Affleck worked with him again. Like, not like they had anything bad.
Yeah,
with
right.
Each other,
Ben Affleck was probably like, I just cut fucking $20,000 veneers.
Yeah, he's like, maybe they'll give me a facelift for Pearl Harbor.
Knows?
I mean, who knows what I'm going to get? Yeah.
His teeth in Good Will Hunting, which we just talked about last night.
Yeah.
He's got normal teeth.
Yeah.
But like, you can tell they're not veneers. Yeah. Where in this one.
Yeah.
Hollywood smile, baby.
Yeah. I don't want to close my eyes.
I wish I could get cast in something so that they would give me $20,000 veneers. I'll take it.
You should put that on your resume. Just apply for roles and be
don't
like,
don't have to pay me. Just get me some veneers.
I mean, does Michael Bay still do that? He did, you know, does he get anyone else plastic surgery on his movie?
Let's
sets
ask
now?
Megan Fox. Didn't she get fired from Transformers?
Yes, she did. Okay. I never know whose side to take on those or like who to, like when I say side to take, I mean like who to believe in like the stories. Cause I don't know, but
we'll dive into that some other day when we tackle that franchise.
But yeah, no, you are right, though. And as like far as Michael Bay is concerned, it's like, yeah, no, Michael Bay's not the nicest guy in the world either.
So I've heard.
Yeah,
I've heard.
But yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's Armageddon.
That's Armageddon.
Released on July 1st.
Are we supposed to do Deep Impact next or no, not doing that?
No, it's getting too close to home, Tom.
Yeah.
Aliens are out. Okay. UFOs have been sighted. The government's all about it. We can't do space movies anymore.
No more space.
We do Interstellar. We need to bring on like a NASA scientist actually explain to us the black hole interdimension. Because even when I think I understand it, I'm like, well, now my fucking brain hurts. I don't know what's happening. She's touching him
too. Is that movie when it comes to when it comes to science or logic? That movie is the complete opposite. Where it's like, I don't understand any of it. But if it's explained to me, and like, you know, people who are smarter than me are like, oh no, yeah, this does actually make sense. I'm like, I don't understand it because it's too smart. And whereas with Armageddon, it's like the spaceship go around the moon fast. Yay!
And
like,
it's funny because in Interstellar, maybe that's what we should do next. The movie that has nothing to do with science and the movie that everyone in the space science world is like, yeah, this is like spot on.
They're like the way the refraction of light hitting the black hole is the most realistic depiction of in there. It's like, all right.
Okay. Versus, if you say so.
But I mean, come on. How come they didn't slingshot around the moon after being in space for 90 minutes? Come on. Like,
oh God. We'll have your son on for the Interstellar one. Wasn't he watching it?
He loves Interstellar. He loves
it. Okay. And we're going to do Interstellar guest host Wes. Yeah. And he can just, he'll probably know 10 times the facts we do. And he'll explain to us how the black hole light refraction works.
I mean, the thing is that movie, like the music in that movie makes it. That's a whole other story.
It's incredible.
Which, by the way,
let's get in sync to do that one with us.
Before we give up, who did the music on this movie? Because I thought I heard an answer that shocked me.
I don't know. I'm Googling it.
Okay. It says Trevor Rabin.
And Hegri Gregson Williams.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind. I thought I heard something that I didn't believe. I thought I heard Danny Elfman did the music for the movie.
We just want Danny Elfman to do the music to everything we talk about on this podcast. Do you know what else Trevor Rabin did?
Let me guess without even looking.
Con Air.
Of course. Again, once
and
he locks.
My favorite, and I'm not embarrassed to admit this, truly one of my favorite movie franchises, and I am not saying Harry Potter. Uh-oh. National Treasure.
You know, I've never seen those.
Shut the fuck up. That is my Star Wars.
Oh, God.
Okay. I am obsessed. We must watch these.
All right.
You're going to hate them.
Why do I have to suspend all logic again?
Well, do you love Nicolas Cage the way I love Nicolas Cage?
I love Nicolas Cage, yeah.
Okay, then you're in.
Okay.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited for you to watch National Treasure. I love them so much.
All right, I'll have to save it.
Okay.
I don't understand this love, but okay, I'll take
it. I love it so much. I love puzzles, and it's like they go hunting for puzzles, so that's why I love it. Okay. All right, well, I have to go take my fiance to the doctors.
All right, well, good talk.
Bye.
See you guys. Bye.
Didn't you see Apollo 13, boy?